sitting on the table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. Protection.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Citizen.
Right.
Will.
Peace.
Losers.
Lose.
Men.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raised the wall. And I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression. Expression. Expression.
Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Culture.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solid.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on SaskTel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings with my special guest Dana Fokerson. Dana is the Executive Director of REACH, which stands for Regina Education and Action on Child Hunger. Welcome, Dana.
Thank you.
And I'm presuming that one of the things we're going to talk about is World Food Day, which just happened yesterday.
Exactly.
Yeah, so what happened there? Let's start there.
Well, we did a sort of a fun thing yesterday to just bring recognition to eating healthy and also to trying to eat local when you can. Mm-hmm. So we partnered with both the school boards, mm-hmm. and we had an event called the Big Crunch. Mm. So I believe we had a little over a dozen schools that participated. This is only second year we've done it. So last year we had two schools. This year we had 12 or 14 schools. Mm-hmm. And we also purchased our carrots from a new business called Local and Fresh. Mm-hmm. And at approximately 11 o'clock yesterday, about 1,700 kids crunched down on a carrot just to bring mm-hmm. recognition to eating healthy and buying local. Saskatoon also did it. Mm-hmm. And so we hope to have a little bit of a contest over the years and get people thinking about, you know, healthy eating, you know, buying local, and just sort of the issues around food security.
Wow. And, you know, I think people are paying more and more attention to food as time goes on, in terms of how it affects our health, how it affects our longevity, you mm-hmm. know, as people. And I think one of the most interesting sort of discoveries, I think some people have known this for a long time, but as society becomes wealthier and more affluent, all of a sudden their life expectancy goes down and their mm-hmm. health goes down. So what's happening?
Well, I think there's a lot of things happening. You know, stress being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some fallacies. Many of us thought that, you know, over time we would work less and have mm-hmm. more time to, you know, relax and do that kind of thing. And that's not really happening. Mm-hmm. You see, you know, my children are growing up, but I see my neighbors and coming and going and taking kids here and there and working. And, you know, so there is a shortage of time to really do those things like gardening and, you know, preparing nice meals mm-hmm. and doing those kind of things. So our lifestyle has really, yes, people may be making more money, but mm-hmm. that, you know, so that's at the one end.
Right.
At the other end, there are many working poor
mm-hmm.
who there's a big gap here, and they're working very, very hard, but food is very expensive. And so are struggling to put healthy food on the tables. So, you know, sort of there's kind of things happening on both, you know, both sort of the economic sides of mm-hmm. things. The other thing is we bought into a lot of advertising and a lot of things about, you know, that it takes a long time to cook food or a long time to grow it. And so we're buying a lot of processed foods and a lot of prepared things that are high in sugar and high in salt. And, you know, so all of that's contributing to our diets. We're not working physically as hard as we used to. And many of us are sitting at desks. And so we're not getting enough exercise. So there's a whole lot of things involved there.
For sure. And I think as time goes on, I think we're becoming more aware of the importance of quality food. You mentioned the sugary stuff. My own personal opinion is sugar is the big culprit for a large number of ailments. And mm-hmm. Personally, I avoid sugar at every opportunity. And I think that if everybody did that, we'd be a lot better off.
Yeah. And it's true in that there's so many things involved in you know, eating healthy and in food security, but one of the simplest things we can all do is read labels.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some things in November, there are some labeling changes that are happening nationally, and one of the things is around sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And what they will be doing on, which I quite approve of this, is that all of the sugars in an item have to be grouped together so that if sugar is the main ingredient in something, it mm-hmm. will now show up mm-hmm. as the first ingredient because all of the sugars have to be grouped together.
Oh,
so
okay.
Then you'll see a multitude of things because sugar is also, if you're not good at reading labels, mm-hmm. you may not recognize all the sugar that's in an item.
They have fancy
yes,
names for
they
them.
Have lots yeah. of fancy names. So that's one of the things that through Health Canada that is coming out in November is some mm-hmm. labeling changes. Some of them I don't even personally quite understand what all mm-hmm. of them are, but the sugar one is definitely one that we should all be able to recognize. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I'm going to back up here a mm-hmm. little bit now after sort of starting off with World Food Day. I'm just wondering about the genesis of REACH.
Okay.
How did that sort of, what need is it fulfilling, mm-hmm. whose idea was it type of thing?
Exactly.
And that sort of thing.
Okay. REACH has been around since 1989, so
wow.
we're in our 25th year.
Mm-hmm.
We came about from a grassroots movement, and it actually came through two different studies that were done in 1988-89 looking at child hunger in Regina.
Mm-hmm.
And that children in Regina were much more susceptible to child hunger than the rest of the province. I always put a caveat on that in mm-hmm. that I don't believe there was a lot of studies being done in the north at the time,
mm-hmm.
so it was probably mostly the cities that they were looking at. They never really determined why children were more susceptible to hunger, but in fact it was. So this grassroots, and it involved also levels of government were involved, the provincial government, social services, and the city of Regina. And they looked at a way to sort of meet that need. And REACH was developed as an umbrella organization to support breakfast and lunch and supper programs in the city. And today we still do that. We actually support 18 other organizations for about 45 different programs, that everything from daycares to some of the high schools, different types of programs around feeding kids. Mm-hmm. But we learned very quickly that just feeding kids was not getting at child hunger. Mm. That in fact, we really needed to support the families to support the kids. And in fact, we support the whole community. So we quite rightly like to go by REACH as opposed to Regina Education and Action on Child Hunger. Even though children are at the core of everything we do, we like REACH because we reach into the community.
Right.
So we reach in to fill the gaps or to break down the barriers. So all of our programs are breaking down barriers of cost, accessibility, and sort of breaking down that barrier of transportation, how people get to the food.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things I always like to emphasize is that we are, you know, we live in an affluent city. Saskatchewan is booming. There's all kinds of jobs. But the gap has got bigger. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. And our cities are growing. So that in itself adds to it. So a lot of the people that we work with some are on social assistance, but many of the people that we work with are working poor. They've got 2 and 3 jobs. They're struggling. They're struggling to put food on the table to feed their children properly. I think there's sort of a myth that it's people that aren't working, and that's not true at all.
Mm-hmm.
We also work with a lot of seniors, a lot of isolated seniors, seniors who, you know, want to stay in their own homes but don't have family support and have difficulty getting, you know, healthy food. And so we have a whole gamut of programs. Other than the child feeding programs where we do directly provide food to the kids, all of our programs, the individuals pay for the food. So, and I think that's very important that we don't give the food away. It is fresh fruit. It's fresh food.
Mm-hmm.
We do buy local when we can, but, you know, we do, you know, cost is also a very much a concern. So,
So is the Good Food Box part of your initiative?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we have one of our foundation programs is called the Good Food Box, and that's a fresh fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And we have 45 locations around Regina, and we actually work with 6 of the reserves around Regina. So we you pay for the Good Food Box, and we have locations in neighborhoods, mostly schools, but there's some businesses, other nonprofits. They volunteer to be a location, and that's where you go to get your box and pay for your box.
And you order this in advance.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So you come in 1 week and you pay for it, and then the next week we deliver the food. And then we have mobile stores. We have 10 mobile stores. We go into 5 inner city neighborhoods that no longer have grocery stores. And most people are familiar with this. Most of our grocery stores are on the outskirts of town, and so they're hard to get to. Mm-hmm. I happen to live in a neighborhood that has grocery stores within walking distance, which is Hillsdale, but there's not many neighborhoods left like that.
Mm-hmm.
So most people have to get in a car and drive, you know, quite a distance to buy their groceries. So we go into those low-income neighborhoods once a week and for 1 to 2 hours and bring in fresh fruits and vegetables, and people can come and buy it. We also go into 5 low-income seniors' high-rises, and those are private. The other stores anybody can go to, but the senior stores are private for those residents that we go to. We have some other programs. We have for seniors, we have a program called the Convenience Meal Program, which is a home delivery program where we deliver frozen meals and fresh fruits and vegetables and baking and milk and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And we actually partner with another nonprofit called Street Culture Youth.
Yes.
And they're our courier drivers. And so it's a win-win for both organizations. And most of the seniors that we work with just love the young men and women that are delivering, and it's great because, you know, they're they have that youth sort of contact. And actually, there's just been a study done by the Senior Secretariat, and it's our model of home delivery and the partnership with Street Culture Youth is has been noted as a best practice in Canada for working with isolated seniors. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of exciting to have something recognized on a national level. So that program.
One of the things that I think has always kind of disturbed me about municipalities, communities around where I've lived, is the tendency of isolating seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And to tell you the truth, I'm not a big fan of seniors' homes. I think that I like centers where everybody gets together, youth and older people. And I don't know, I just have, I suppose some people like the concept of a senior citizens center, but getting into that age bracket myself, I don't agree with the whole connotation. I just think it's wonderful to have the opportunity to interact with older people. Mm-hmm. I was involved with Meals on Wheels program in Weyburn when I lived there, and I always enjoyed meeting and talking with the folks that were having their meals delivered, and I know that they enjoyed the visits as well.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, a great aspect as far as I'm concerned. Where are we going here now?
Okay. Well, we could kind of go back to, we started with the Big Crunch and World Food Day, and one of the questions that I was asked a couple of days ago about the Big Crunch is, so these kids crunch down on a carrot. Mm-hmm. What does that do? And one of the things it does is it gets the children talking and about the carrot and if they like the carrot. And one of the things that we've found is if we can work with kids, the younger the better, but the more that we can teach them and more they can experience with food at a younger age, they will eat healthier. But not only that, they will influence their parents. Mm-hmm. And we have many testimonials with preschool kids where some of the preschools that we work with try to give a variety of food to the preschool kids and how they will get very excited with a melon or a kiwi or even a strawberry or a grapefruit or a grape, some things that maybe many of us take for granted, but they may have never eaten before. And they will love it. And they will then go home and ask their parents for it. Mm-hmm. And parents will tell us, well, they never bought that for their kids because they didn't think they would eat it.
Right.
But on further discussion, we find out the parents have never eaten it.
Right.
So it's through the kids that the parents actually try some of these things and really like it. So that's part of what we're doing. So when we say, we want to change the world and we want to change how people eat in Saskatchewan and how they eat in Regina, but one of the best places to start is with the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes me, I know where I was going to go here. I'm sure we've all been shopping and you're in line with your shopping cart and you look at the next cart ahead of you or maybe the cart behind you and you see it's full of chips and pop and processed foods and treats and all the rest of the stuff. And you think to yourself, how can you eat that stuff? And I can see where if you have your kids educated, and they've got this attitude about quality food, they're going to say, Mom, don't buy that. Wait, I want some of this, But there's where the education, again, sugar is the big culprit, if you can make people understand that.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you a story, and I'm very, I can be very judgmental. I'm at that age, and it's hard sometimes not to judge. But I was at a conference last year, and it was actually a doctor from the World Health Organization who was talking about how, nowadays, our for most of us, probably at least over 40, have a vision of hunger being a skinny child. Mm-hmm. Very, very, very thin. Well, that's not the truth anymore. Mm-hmm. That hunger in many, many countries is an obese child. And just because they're that chubby child mm-hmm. doesn't mean that they're eating well and, in fact, are most likely malnutritioned and could still be starving mm-hmm. because they're eating mostly that sugar or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And this doctor told this story of about being in Mexico, mm-hmm. but in very remote area of Mexico, where these single moms lived up in a mountain and had to walk 4 hours to this village to get their, like, a social assistance check mm-hmm. and then buy their food and hike it back up for 4 hours right. to this mountain. And guess what they bought?
The lightest stuff.
The lightest stuff, which is the chips, which is the powdered juices. Mm-hmm. And it kind of gave me a whole sort of realization that mm-hmm. sometimes some of the, not all of it, mm-hmm. and you know the grocery stores you're in when you see those things, you know, like what's happening, but sometimes those very processed things, those things that really have no nutrition are the lightest things, mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. why people are buying them, because they have to carry them, and often they're also the cheapest. And yes. which is a sad reality, you know, fruits and vegetables, you know, are more expensive than chips.
A big jug of pop.
Yes.
is cheaper than milk.
I know, but that's the struggle, but sort of the reality too. So mm-hmm. I've learned to step back a little bit and sort of try to assess a little mm-hmm. better, but exactly. And, unfortunately the poor eating habits go across economical mm-hmm. levels. And we know from our work, the other thing that goes with this is there's a couple of generations, and we're probably going to our third generation that doesn't know how to cook. So we do a mm-hmm. lot of teaching cooking skills. Right. And again, we work with kids as young as 3 and 4 years old. We have after school programs for kids in grades 4 and 5. And we work with many other, mm-hmm. other nonprofits. So, you know, young moms, young dads, yep. kids that have, you know, been in trouble with the law. We work with some of the health clinics. We work with autistic kids. So we work with a number of other organizations teaching cooking skills. Mm-hmm. And 'cause you can't be buying fresh and healthy food that's not processed right, if you don't know how to cook it.
Exactly.
So that's the other challenge. Mm-hmm. And
I think a large part of that process, though, would be instilling confidence.
Yes.
You know, because they're so afraid, oh, I'm going to make a mistake. Mm-hmm. But after you've been cooking a little bit, you know, a little while in the kitchen, you start to realize, well, japers, this is kind of simple.
Yeah.
But there's trepidation if you've never done it before. So I can see we're getting kids in the kitchen and on a fairly regular basis, okay, today we're going to make this. And they find out, oh, gee, it's not that tough to make soup. Or, you know, I can make hamburgers all by myself, you know.
Exactly. And it's sort of the creativity of it. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, again, if you've never seen your parents cook,
right.
you know, so again, it seems like something that's, you know, such a large thing to do. And so, exactly. So we mm-hmm. kind of have, like, it's not, you know, you need the food. You need to know what's healthy food, but you also need to know how to prepare it.
Yeah, I remember my in-laws visiting their daughter, one of their daughters, in a large city, and when they'd go to visit, they were always appalled at what they found in their fridge, which was basically nothing. Mm-hmm. They were eating at restaurants all the time, and relatively affluent people, mm-hmm. and I don't know, perhaps they were eating okay at restaurants. But they weren't doing that much cooking at home.
Yeah. I always tell people that if you're fairly affluent and you're really smart about it, you probably can eat healthy, mm-hmm. you know, but it's going to cost you, and it's going to cost you lots of money.
Yeah.
Most of us and most of the, you know, the people that we're working with can't afford that. So they really need those skills.
Yeah, for sure. Yes, it's more expensive shopping at the grocery store, but when you compare that to restaurant eating, it's way cheaper.
Oh, totally.
And at that point, we've kind of reached the end of our first half hour. So we're going to take a break here, and I've reached back to one of my favorite artists, Michael Franti, and I'm going to play something to do with sunshine. I'm sure you'll recognize it, and I was at a concert not too long ago where they put all kinds of yellow balloons in the audience. We had a great time. So Michael Franti is one of my favorites, and we'll be right back.
1, 2, 3, bill I got to pay. Some days you lose, you win, and the water's as high as the times you're in. So I jump back in and where I learned to swim, try to keep my head above it the best I can. That's why here I am, just waiting for the storm to pass me by. And that's the sound of sunshine coming down. What's up, man? You got a little work or 20 to lend. I opened up my hand and said, I'm glad to see they could take away my job, but now my friends, you see. And here I am, just waiting for this storm to pass me by. And that's the sound of sunshine coming down. And that's the sound of sunshine.
Never ends with my guitar on the beach there with all my friends. The sun's so hot and the waves in motion, and everything smells like suntan lotion. The ocean and the girl so sweet, so kick off your shoes and relax your feet. They say that miracles are never ceasing, and every single song needs a little releasing. The stereo bumping till the sun goes down, and I only want to hear that sound. The sun goes, that's the sound of sunshine.
And we're back, and that was Michael Franti, The Sound of Sunshine. Michael's my fallback guy for music. And I'm Jim Hutchings. I'm here with Dana Fulkerson, and we're talking about reach and food is a human right. I was going to touch on also, this is a little bit old news, but earlier this year, the special rapporteur on human rights, I think was he was checking on food, the right to food in Canada.
Food security.
And he had some rather uncomplimentary things to say about Canada. And And our federal government, I'm afraid they spent most of their time denying what the special rapporteur had to say in kind of a shoot the messenger kind of fashion. But the reality is there are a lot of people in this country, in this province, in this city, that go to bed hungry at night. And it kind of makes you wonder how this can happen, because I can remember, I'm old enough to remember when Jean Chrétien said that he was going to bring an end to child poverty in this country. Well, I'm sorry to report it hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the issue for sure. And I was really interested to hear your explanation of how REACH has kind of evolved from all about food to taking a broader view. And I guess it would be fair to say that's basically because it's all interconnected.
Yes, it is. And just, you know, you don't want to throw out a lot of stats, but the one stat that everybody should be aware of in Canada, 1 in 6 children is going hungry. So that's a pretty, and that's across Canada. So that's an awful stat in a mm-hmm. a country that's, you know, overall fairly affluent.
Right.
You know, at REACH, we say that, and this is, we believe this, that every Regina citizen has a right to safe, nutritious, culturally acceptable, and affordable food, and the opportunity to obtain it through non-emergency sources. So everything that we do is about that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I gave you that stat that 1 in 6 children is hungry, and that's where REACH started, mm-hmm. working with hungry kids. But we really learned that just feeding kids or just providing food wasn't enough, that we really had to build, and again, this is a overused word, but self-sufficiency, that we needed to find ways that we were building independence and skills in children and their families so that they could look after themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're doing. Those are, all of our programs are built around, you know, teaching cooking skills, teaching nutrition skills, providing food. People buy the food from us. It's fresh fruit and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they, by buying in bulk, we keep the prices down, those kind of things. But it's all about building self-sufficiency, giving people the skills so that they're able to do that. There's all sorts of barriers.
Mm-hmm.
The way our cities are built, you know, there's barriers in, you know, minimum wages.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a myth that those kids that are going hungry, it's because their parents don't work. The majority of people that we're working with, the parents are working.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them 2 and 3 jobs. Many of the children may be in single parent families, but there's lots of families where both parents are working. They're just eking out a living.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many other variables that work into this. Our booming cities, Regina, everybody knows how much rents have gone up. Guess what? Your rent goes up. Where does the money come for the extra rent? Well, it comes from the food budget. Food budget's the only budget that most families have that's flexible. If you're mm-hmm. just making it, that any extra money you have is actually your food money,
yeah.
and, you know, an extra, you know, drug prescription or a rent increase or a, you know, car breaks down or kid needs something for school, that money comes from the food money. So it's not that people are, you know, putting mm-hmm. themselves in these situations. It's really hard to get out of these situations.
Right.
And food is, you know, it's scary to think of it, but that's the disposable income for many people, and it's not very much.
Right, right. With kids, are there any programs that, like breakfast programs for kids, lunch, whatever?
Yes. We actually support. There are many programs in the city and too many. And I say too many only in, it's, to me, it's an embarrassment
right.
to us that we need these. And so we support 18 other organizations and schools for breakfast, lunch, and supper programs. Mm-hmm. Some of the teen centers, like Rainbow Youth, has a supper program for kids in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And children do need to eat, and they need to eat healthy, and especially our school programs and our preschool programs, you need good nutrition to learn well. And so those programs are really needed. Mm-hmm. And I also have testimonials from working families who will tell me because their kid gets one of those meals, breakfast or mm-hmm. lunch at school,
right.
that allows them to be able to give them a good supper because they don't have enough money to give them three mm-hmm. good meals a day.
Right.
So it does fill a gap there also for families. It's not because families are too lazy to make the meal or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, there's also all kinds of situations why that child maybe not get fed, but that's the most important thing is that they do get fed so they can learn well at school.
Yeah, food is a large part of any equation, mm-hmm. of any situation in the city,
yeah.
whether you're talking about single parents, people who are unemployed or underemployed, mm-hmm. Or people who have health issues. Food is always right in there as
yes,
a major
exactly.
issue.
And there's been some studies that have just come out in the last year, and one was from the Canadian Physicians Association.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things it's not so much that I'm aware of happening that much here in Regina. I know it happens a bit in Saskatoon, but some physicians do write prescriptions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the prescription is for healthy food.
Right.
Now, you can't go to the drugstore, but it's what they're telling people is mm-hmm. is that they need to eat healthy.
Right.
And diabetics in particular.
Sure.
However, if you don't have the money, how do you fill that prescription?
Right.
And they know that even though that's what they're recommending and writing that out for the individuals, they're not able to do that because of the extra cost. So that's, you know, something too that, you know, we need to work on. Sometimes you can get government subsidy for mm-hmm. medication, but you can't get government subsidy for that healthy food. Not mm-hmm. if you're the working poor. You
right.
may be able to on, you know, some other programs, but
yeah, and the problem with getting it from government is it usually you don't have stable funding there. It's
yeah.
it's going to vary from we want to get rid of our deficit. So what can we get rid of as an expense? Oh, well, just nobody, these guys don't vote anyway. So,
yeah.
and they have mindsets like this and a lot of important programs get tossed out the window. Now they might get reinstated at a different time, but just for political expediency, they're gone.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's why it's, you know, really the preventative side is really what's, you know, mm-hmm. the key. And that's what, you know, with working with the kids, you're really trying to prevent that even happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we can get at kids and have them eat healthier, have the cooking skills, you know, maybe influence their parents, you know, that's our mm-hmm. hope because they, you know, if they look at food differently and, you know, have a healthy aspect about it, then, you know, we can change some things.
Yeah, I think there's a general trend now in the social sciences and with groups that study these things and plan these things. And they're starting to realize, and some governments are starting to realize, not necessarily our own, but I think the move is there, that the better care you take of people who need this care, it will save you money in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, being totally crass here,
yeah,
it's going to save money if you look after people properly, because then they're not going to find themselves in situations where they're using emergency services and that kind of mm-hmm. thing.
Well, we know that, you know, for every child who graduates high school and goes on and gets an education,
mm-hmm.
you know, education's the way out
right.
for many of the children that we work with. But we have to feed them well so they can learn well, so
right.
they can, you know, graduate.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a long process. And,
right.
and but that's the answer, you know, is to, you know, to change a lot of things. But the key is, you know, through education and graduating more children who their lives will change and will
mm-hmm.
break patterns and will change,
right.
you know, will change the world.
I'm sort of doing things in reverse here, Dana. I'm going to back up some
yeah.
more. I'm just wondering how you became an activist, because that's what you are.
I have a passion. That's right.
How did you get involved in this work? What path have you been on?
Mm-hmm.
How did you get started?
Well, I think there's two influences, and I tell people this. One, I had parents who were volunteers, parents who were always involved in the community,
mm-hmm.
and in particular, my mother, who worked in mental health. And so we were always part of that sort of volunteer in all kinds of mm-hmm. social issues and different things. I started out in a sport and recreation background, but I've always worked in the community,
mm-hmm.
and I've always worked with at-risk individuals or vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked in three provinces, Ontario, Alberta, and Saskatchewan. I'm from Saskatchewan,
mm-hmm.
and I worked in Ottawa, I worked in Regina, I worked in Saskatoon, I worked in Edmonton,
wow.
I worked in North Battleford. And so I seen it, and I seen it from different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
I worked on playgrounds, and I saw the hungry kids,
mm-hmm.
and I saw the social issues and some of the influences of things they were involved in. I worked in mental health, and I worked with homeless people, and I worked with people with addictions and those kind of things, always from the recreation and a sort of a therapeutic background,
mm-hmm.
where people are very open to you. You're not, quote, the doctor or the
mm-hmm.
nurse or
mm-hmm.
the psychologist or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so learned a lot of these issues. But on many of the issues, food was always a struggle. It was an issue. And so that's kind of how I came to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my first job was working on playgrounds, and
mm-hmm.
the things that kids told me on the playgrounds, what they were dealing with,
mm-hmm.
were huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always been, I tell people, food security and poverty and the issues that go with that have always been at the core of what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, I've kind of got further and further away from the sort of the front lines
mm-hmm.
of what I did. And I had an opportunity 6.5 years ago now, when the previous executive director retired,
mm-hmm.
to apply for this position. And so I'm kind of back where I started with 30 years experience.
Right.
So I hope that, you know, now I can do some things that I didn't know about when I first started out. So
mm-hmm.
that's how I got here.
Now, I'm presuming you have lots of conversations with municipal
mm-hmm.
and provincial, perhaps even federal officials and that sort of thing. What's your take on the sort of the awareness of everyone when it comes to the issues we've been talking about? Is this translating into reasonable planning? Are we going in a positive direction?
You know, it's such a big issue, and, you know, I think every political party, every level of government, there's people that are aware,
mm-hmm.
and then there's others that aren't.
Okay.
So, you know, in fairness, you know, I could paint everybody with a paintbrush, but I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm.
I think right now food security is more at the forefront than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, you kind of got to strike while the iron's hot, or whatever that expression is. But so I think there's a little bit more awareness right now than there has been for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think there's a lot of blinders.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, blinders in that, well, that can't be happening in Saskatchewan because
right.
they're booming. Or that can't be happening in Regina because, geez, everything looks good. So there is a degree, there's two kinds of ignorance,
mm-hmm.
and I think there's a type of ignorance that they just don't want to know about it.
Called willful ignorance.
Yes, yeah, okay, willful. And then there's a type of ignorance where people truly just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're doing so well, they think everybody else is.
Right.
And
if you're not, it's your fault.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it is hard to get people to realize that there is this gap.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think there's some good things that have, you know, happened. I know that City of Regina just did their Design Regina and looking at their community plan. Mm-hmm. And there was a number of us that were able to attend all the meetings. And, you know, we were able to influence some policy. And, you know, so there's some good things. Mm-hmm. Is there enough? Probably not. But, you know, there's enough openings that we can still work on that over time. The provincial government, you know, we just had a, I was just at a meeting yesterday looking at the child nutrition programs, you know, and it's not the politicians, but it's the administration, and they truly want to know, mm-hmm. you know, how, what else we should be doing and, you know, how we can do it. So we're, you know, definitely, you know, working that way. You know, does my MLA know about food security? I don't know. You mm-hmm. know, like, mm-hmm. so, you know, like that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government, again, you know, and you go to the, you know, when the repertoire was here, he wasn't treated very well.
No.
And, you know, it was total, like, maybe not total, but a lot of denial on
exactly.
that.
Yeah.
And yet, afterwards,
right.
you know, the Conference Board of Canada, there's been a number of studies now done on food security mm-hmm. and a number of professional organizations like the Physicians of Canada and mm-hmm. a number of things have come out after this. So, you know, I think that there's some acknowledgement. Is there any funding or those kind mm-hmm. of things? Not really, but, you know,
right.
sort of there.
I guess the further away you get from sort of the pointy end,
yeah.
the less actual understanding there is.
Exactly, yeah.
So,
and, you know, yeah. it's like, the frustrating thing is we have more than enough food in this country. You know, we're not a big population. Like, mm-hmm. we shouldn't have this issue, but we do.
Right. And I think it could be characterized as part of an overall solution to people who are in distress for whatever reason,
yeah.
you know, disadvantaged, homeless, etc. And the strategy, I mean, to me, it's as plain as the nose in your face. You help the people who are in that situation, mm-hmm. and by so doing, you're actually going to decrease their dependence on emergency services, and guess what? You'll save money.
Yeah.
And then the other side of things is to, again, worry about, okay, what are the children eating, you know?
Yeah.
And then they're able to perform in school, and when they can perform in school and they graduate, they've got a high school education or go on into university, and they have a life.
Yeah.
And if we can keep this up eventually, you'll be out of be out of a job.
Well, that would be the, you know, I mean, that's what we want to be. And really what you're talking about here, if you mm-hmm. totally, we're talking about the eradication of poverty. And again, we can do that.
Yes.
You know, and I don't have the quote in front of me, but, oh, yes, I do.
Ah.
Nelson Mandela quotes, poverty is not an accident. Like slavery and apartheid, it's man-made and can be removed by the actions of human beings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we can eradicate poverty. And what's homelessness? What is food insecurity? Those are all symptoms mm-hmm. of poverty.
Right.
And, you know, rather than skirt around the issue, that's what we really need, both federally and provincially, is let's just get rid of it.
Right.
And how do we do that?
Yeah.
And that's really what, you know, we need to be doing.
I'm thinking as I'm talking to you here that what you and I need to do and the people listening need to do is we need to talk to our elected representatives and tell them this is important.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to our council yeah. members on council. We need to talk to our MLAs. We need to talk to our MPs, write letters, mm-hmm. and tell these people this is important,
yeah.
you know, for everyone, and we expect you to find a reasonable way to improve things and eradicate
yeah.
poverty. It's within our grasp.
And I agree. Like, I, first of all, I've never wanted to hold a political office. So I do have respect for politicians mm-hmm. in that sense. And to me, they still are, maybe not totally, but I believe our politicians are a reflection of us. So if we don't care or we're not showing that we care, then we can't really blame mm-hmm. the politicians on whatever level they are. So I agree. We need to take that action and, mm-hmm. you know, how whatever little it is or where you can influence it,
yep.
if it's just isn't as much as just making sure that they understand what the issue is, that's what yep. we need to do.
When you look at what's happening today, at the money that's being spent by governments, just recent expenditures that we know of here in the province and in the city, you think of what they've spent their money on, and you have to think there's a disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow or other, they think it's fine to spend millions of dollars on things that we don't, that are not crucial to our existence,
mm-hmm.
and there doesn't seem to be money for things that are crucial to our mm-hmm. existence, like feeding children.
Yeah. And I think there's, you know what, I think we're affluent enough if we can do both. You know, like,
sure,
I absolutely. Really think we can. And, but it's, you know, it's how that's done, that there's such a disconnect that,
mm-hmm.
you know, we are a prosperous province and we can do a lot of things, but we also can take care of these other issues.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think one should be at the loss of the other sort of thing. I think there's enough here done right that we can do it.
Well, Dan, I'd like to thank you very much for coming here today and talking about all this good stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's an important conversation and people need to talk to each other about it. And there are answers there for sure. And we have to encourage our elected people to go out and find these answers.
Exactly.
Because they are there. So as we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For information on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, a founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."